Why does the sun need to move? Why do we revolve in a burning star?
I wouldn't think summer would be a big inconvenience here.
Ah, I said I'd be at worse somehow.
He made the sun brighter.
This is all good podcast content we're just losing. You don't even need the visual. You just just imagine Mark fighting a pair of curtains.
It's more of a radio play than a podcast.
Hey folks, it's sunny in Glasgow.
Too sunny, some might say.
Too sunny, some might say. Yeah. Welcome, it's Unsung. I'm Mark, joined by
Grant Donaldson.
Grant Donaldson and this other guy.
The Grant Donaldson, after, you know, that weird voice message you left, that's going to have to be your title now.
I was hoping we weren't going to talk about that.
which band are you from?
Money Jitro. Several allergies, that's it.
Anything else you want to confess?
No, without a priest present.
You're from Ayrshire, you don't like priests. So, Grant, we get this out the road. Anything coming up that you want to advertise?
Am I allowed to?
Coming
of course
hot.
You're allowed to.
Oh, I wasn't sure if I was allowed.
Of course you are.
I'm actually playing a gig on Tuesday night with Several Allergies. We only got announced today. We're supporting Sunrot.
Mm-hmm. And in Bismuth.
Bismuth, aye.
The Classic Grand in Glasgow.
You know more than I do. I'm playing that on Tuesday, and then Money Jitro are doing a big show at Stereo on May 25th.
May 25th.
That's an ensemble cast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep, 10 members doing the version of the songs that are a two-piece. But it was supposed to be a five-piece band when we started it. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're doing a 10-piece. And we've got Comfort supporting us. So yeah, mm-hmm. It should be good.
Who's taking part in the band?
We're not really, like, we've announced the bands that people have played in, but we're not saying who each member is just yet.
We can tell people that I'm not doing it, can't we?
I don't know. Do you want to do it? Is that your way of asking?
I'm just winding you up. It's okay.
I can squeeze you in.
I'm just being a wee waddle.
That's usually my job.
Thanks for joining us, Grant. So last time you were here, what was the last time actually?
It was
I'm getting the messages.
68.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't too heavy an episode really, but it was a proper episode. You had to do research and remember things. We thought, let's get Grant back in because, you know, we got on quite well. And
do something you don't need to remember.
Yeah, let's give him free rein. So this
stoked
week,
to be back, by the way.
Stoked.
See, stoked on it.
That's how you know somebody pays attention.
I heard two people say that at the gig last night.
Yeah,
and I decided not to tell you because I thought you were having a bad time.
That would have ruined the gig for me.
Send you over the edge.
Besides, with the 800 people crammed into a coffin and the PA that switched off and the terrible headlining band, that would have ruined it for me.
I thought so. That's why I didn't tell you.
But yeah, so we're going to do a cover mount mixtape, which is usually pretty easy going and a bit of a laugh.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a wee while. What was the last one?
Can't remember, but Craig was involved.
Craig's done a fair few of them. Mm. I'll give him a wee shout out this time, actually, because I think there's a couple of acts on here he's kind of hot for, and I don't get it. But have you listened to any of the Cover Mount episodes, Grant? Because I know you sometimes follow the show.
There's not a lot.
I don't think, like, for like doing like Kerrang CDs and
well,
stuff.
Well, just any, yeah, we've done.
I've heard like the Sound as a Pound. You've done that.
Okay, well, Let's go with that then. Embrace the tone of irreverence. Very few of these bands are going to listen to this. Very few of these bands are still
around.
I've heard of two of the bands on this.
This is actually one of the first notes I have on this. Right, so this week we're going to do Radio Kerrang Volume 6, which is from the 25th of April 1998. Grant, when were you born? And what month?
November.
Right, so you were five.
I'm born the day after you. I was. That's no, right. Not the actual
Jeez,
day after.
How'd I forget that? That's terrible.
Aye.
Maybe if you invited me to play with your band, I would remember things.
I'll send a text right now.
But yeah, so this you were 5 years old at this point. I think this is, as our sack of fucking horrors would tell you, this is probably the peak era for these kind of series. I know they continued like well on, because you were saying, I think you got your first one round about 2005 or something. Like that.
Oh, you did say that. Did you buy those, or did they come in? Because I know eventually Kerrang just started selling these kind of things and putting bigger bands on them, and they stopped doing them on actual covers.
Aye, they released compilations. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was saying, because I'm annoyed I wasn't back home at my mum's to check. But I think I used to have a subscription to Kerrang, so I think it was a CD that came with the magazine, and it had Avenged Sevenfold on it when Not Backcountry, the second album, came out.
Oh,
I think it was Almost Easy that was on the sampler. It was Dillinger, because Ironworks had just came out.
Okay.
Almost Easy is the fourth record. I know that because my friend's a fan.
Your friend's
I'm not a fan. Not a fan. Well, that's a good song.
That is like a friend of mine. For a friend, totally in it.
That's a good song, though.
So it was either 2006 or 2007, but I'm sure it was. I didn't buy it. It came with the magazine.
I didn't buy it?
Okay.
I loved it.
Let's just demonstrate a little bit too much knowledge of cover mounts. So by that point, they were all in jewel cases.
Yeah. Right?
But at this point, they're still in the wee cardboard slip sleeves.
And just to paint a picture in your head, when I picked this out of the bag last week, the case is the sleeve is pretty much.
And the glue's done, man.
Like totally disintegrated. Like,
yeah. Used to be a horse, then it used to be glue. Yeah. It's just like flopping about with other CDs in it. But I used to actually carry a lot of these in my car because it was a good way to just not get bored. You know, like it was just like 20 different compilation albums. And it kind of forced you to sort of reckon with them a bit more, because when you first listened to them, it was dead easy to just sort of skip through them to a couple. And, you know, you did. Some of them grew on you. Not a lot of this one. But some of it.
I think there's a couple of growers in this.
Right, so this is really interesting, because this is quite literally like a different generation of stuff for you. So this is 1998, setting the scene, what, we're like 4 years into new metal supremacy, effectively. Fred Durst is like...
Well, I wouldn't say it's ruling the roost at the moment. It starts about the 2000s, but it's definitely
this is like a lot of albums are coming out that were dead credible, you know, like the first System of a Down, Deftones. I mean, Korn, obviously, the first album was 94, and then...
Life is Peachy was 96.
Yeah, so I mean, no, this is like a, because this would be like freaking Unleashed kind of era, like all that kind of stuff.
What was the first Slipknot album? Was that 98?
99.
That's why I would say there's a little bit later, because some of the bands that are on this, like 1 Minute Silence, for example, like they got a major record label for their next set of records, which came out in 2000, which is when the Feeding Frenzy was happening.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that, you know, obviously like Hybrid Theory and stuff in 2003 was like the peak in terms of sales and dominance and stuff like that.
I listened to that yesterday.
Why?
I knew this was coming. I wanted to, plant myself in the era.
Anyway, yeah. So just that's kind of the scene. Like, I remember this period, and it was like post grunge was kicking about. You hear a bit of post grunge in this, but yeah, there's a lot of new metal, and there's still a fair bit of like kind of chuggy sort of Fear Factory esque
groove,
sort of groove metal kicking about as well. We'll go into it in a wee bit of detail. One thing I do want to say, and I've actually used it a wee bit. I found out about a pretty good other podcast, a rival podcast. There are other podcasts out there called Free With This Month's Issue. Two hosts, Ian and Colin, and they always bring in a guest as well. They had an episode in this one, and their guest was a guy called Gaz Jones, who also has a podcast, entertaining guy. Anyway, so they've done this record, and I couldn't help my curiosity, because I knew what I thought of it. I was like, what do these three amiable English blokes think it? And there's some really good details, actually, that they've thrown in, and I hope they don't mind me recycling them for our own audience. I'll try and give a heads up. If you want to see the distinction between some sort of warm English generosity and some Scottish cynicism, you're about to see it. You could do a compare and contrast to how we discuss some of these tunes.
We're fairly cantankerous.
But, I mean, bless those guys for being so kind. I just can't. It doesn't feel right. But yeah, we'll get into it. And the first thing, Grant, you said before we even started recording here, you wanted to ask, why the fuck is somebody doing a spoken intro? So in this one... Garbage, the band Garbage, fronted by Shirley Manson. Shirley Manson does the intro, and it does, there's like a distinctive little kerrang, sort of like, what would you call it? Like a little sound.
An ident or something like that.
Aye, ident, mm. Exactly. That, so you know that radio tuning sound that's at the start of it? It's a dead weird radio tuning sound at that. If you listen to these compilations, that's actually a really distinctive sound. Like I can hear it clearly in my head, even as I'm just saying it. So, but yeah, so I think Garbage were onto their second, maybe even their third record at this point. How was this fucking recorded?
At gunpoint, I would imagine. It sounds like it was recorded at gunpoint.
But I mean, how was it physically recorded? And I don't mean like they couldn't record things back in 1998. I just mean like, you did have a mobile phone. You can just like, I mean, did she phone them up on like a payphone?
Was Chino's over the phone on the last one?
I think Chino's is over the phone.
Yeah, it sounds like it was in an echoey room with like a proper like old school one of those dictaphone things.
I thought it sounded like she was standing next to an air vent or something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a dictaphone that's been used for it, I think. There's no high quality equipment involved in the recording.
So maybe it was done at one of their gigs, somebody cornered her, like, oh, we need you to do the intro.
I'm reliably informed that there's loads of tracks on here that you're going to love. I suggest you turn up your stereo as loud as it goes. If you want to hear some new stuff from Garbage, keep your ears peeled from April 27th. Our new single, Push It, will be in the shops. Till then, this is Shirley Manson from Garbage signing off.
Okay.
Well, she might be in the office for an interview or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lousy bit of mixing from Kerrang, because they kind of put a backing track of a Garbage song, but she's mumbling quite a bit anyway. Mm. And so it just kind of drowns out what she says for half of it. Not that we're like split hairs too much, but if you're going to get somebody to do a voiceover, don't then fucking cover it with a backing track. It's just...
My favourite part of it is when she says, I'm told there'll be some good tracks. And I'm like, yeah, you know fucking nothing, pal, do you?
I mean, fair play to Shirley Manson.
Do you know the series? Do you know the series here?
She seems like a pretty likable person.
She does. Yeah.
And so that's a sort of like, yeah, I don't know what I'm vouching for here, so I'm just going to put this in for like a disclaimer.
Can I go on a little tangent here? Because the algorithm caught me with Garbage like right after I listened to this and did a bit of research. Apparently, like in the early 2000s, she said that when the band almost broke up, or it was quite fractious, their label basically, she found out through a friend of theirs who was quite high up at Interscope, the label they were on, and basically he was in a meeting, the label were trying to decide whether they wanted to put the money behind Garbage's third album or No Doubt's new record, and they decided to go with No Doubt, and she was like, it made us feel really shit, and that's what kind of led to us feeling like a bit infighting in the band, but also it was like at the time, there was only room for one. It's totally bizarre, like... Yeah,
that's kind of strange, especially at that time as well, because, you know, that's pre-streaming, sort of like, there's not really a lot of torrent sites in 98, you know, you still were shifting decent amounts of albums.
You can just see the cunts in the record label going, we've only got room for one act, though, that's got a woman that sings, right? We've only got room for one this year, just one rock band.
Yeah, just, you know? It's also just they were so different. I mean,
totally different, exactly. Yeah. That's another thing. Like, I can't imagine there'd be a huge amount of crossover between their audiences, but women are...
Oh, no. I disagree. I think there would be, but I think like just the aesthetics, you know, I mean Garbage had a kind of slightly gothy thing going on as well. I do think probably a lot of people listen to both, but yeah, I mean, they just, it does seem an odd thing to have to choose between, doesn't it?
Women are monoliths in this era, that's it.
So yeah, Shirley Manson half-heartedly introducing this compilation. The compilation kicks off properly with Jerry Cantrell and a track called Cut You In.
Wish you hadn't.
You familiar with Jerry Cantrell or Alice in Chains, Grant?
I'd heard about Jerry Cantrell because Greg Puciato was on tour with him, like as a backing singer or something like that.
Oh, really?
Last year, the year before.
Just name dropping. Do you want me to edit out the clank there? is this Greg Puciato of Dillinger Escape Plan, whom you played with just recently? Was he chatting about this?
But I didn't talk to him.
All right. You didn't pay for a VIP ticket?
I spoke very briefly with him. Nah, I didn't even want a VIP ticket. I saw the posters.
You know, see when I interviewed Ben, we're backstage in the QMU.
Another clank.
Yeah, my good friend Ben from Dillinger Escape Plan, of course, we're on first name terms. And Greg just comes bounding into the room, like a total force of nature, like absolutely, like must have been pissed or something, and he's just like bamming up everybody in the room, like ruffling their head and like putting people in headlocks and all that, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here, man?
That's really bizarre. What I expected him to be like, yeah. But I think because he was ill, he was pretty chill when he also was like missing for half the show.
Yeah.
But no, that this is like not because of the show. I'd seen that he'd been playing with Jerry Cantrell. That's how I've heard his name. But this is the first song I've heard by him.
If you're listening to this and you're a member of Dillinger Escape Plan and you want to be my friend, please email us. I feel a bit left out. Okay, Jerry Cantrell. This is the lead single from Boggy Depot, which is his debut solo album. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of this was probably originally intended for Alice in Chains, but I mean, as of about 1996, Layne Staley was basically very heavily drug addicted. He was a recluse for a lot of it, just staying in his house in Seattle. This was following the death of his ex-fiancée, who also died because of a drug overdose. I think it's worth remembering just how fucking big Alice in Chains actually got. This song's a big deal, you know, even in the sense of we're an offshoot of Alice in Chains is kicking off this compilation.
Yeah. It's Alice in Chains at play. It's just Alice in Chains without Layne. That's it, exactly.
Yeah, you know, so it's like Sean and Mike and Jerry, obviously, minus Layne.
The guy for Fishbone on the horns.
on the horns, yeah. Musically, it's a bit of a strange intro to the compilation. I think it's arguably, when you look at the track listing, the biggest hitter on here, yeah, in terms of names.
The thing with the first three songs is like, we've spent the money, we're putting these at the front, we spent money getting these ones here, you know.
I would encourage the audience to maybe backtrack a wee bit to the episode.
Yeah, I've said that here as well. Like, there's definitely some economic and musical scene factors involved. I think there's a lot of moving parts with these compilations.
I would love to just get somebody to fucking clear it up a bit. But we did a show when we started the mixtape Cover Mount mixtape series, where we looked at how these cover mounts actually probably worked, and that mixture between you want to get a name on it to make it big versus other bands paying to be on it alongside that name. So what way does money change hands, or is it like favours? Is it like, oh, we want an interview with you, so we'll put your track on here, or vice versa? You know, it's just difficult to parse how these CDs really came about in terms of who was in the driving seat for certain songs. But it seems like getting Jerry Cantrell, and especially getting this tune, because this was a single, this was the lead single off this album. Now, it must have done its single run, obviously, to then be included here, but it kind of confused me, because then if you really like this song, there's less incentive to go and buy the album, you know, if you've just got it on a free CD. So that kind of decision has always kind of like confused me, because there's other tracks on here that are like lesser songs by the bands who are trying to advertise the record that has maybe their main hit, and we'll obviously get to some of those. But I just have never really worked out who's pushing and who's pulling here.
Could that be like putting it on a British magazine if it's not done as well in the UK or something? Maybe that's why it's the top of the CD.
It could be. Aye.
I do think there will be some, like you're basically hinting at, there is some political factors at play here. There's definitely a rep somewhere saying, can you take this? I'll give you an interview with Y if you take X and do Z with it. Do you know what I mean?
Aye. There'll definitely be some, what is it called, horse trading, that kind of thing. But obviously they felt that this, as a flagship, would bring in some more sales. You know,
the first Cover Mount episode we did was on Radio Krang Volume 5. Mm-hmm. And that opened with Soulfly, who were quite a big feature on the CD for that, which I think was from their latest record at the time as well. So, yeah, definitely front-loading it a little bit.
Aye, I mean, you want to kind of capture attention. Yeah, I mean, the song's fine. With the acoustic guitar, it's kind of a bit more rustic southern Alice in Chains as opposed to that big alt-metal Alice in Chains that you get. Choke on the bone. The harmonised vocals on it are so similar to Alice in Chains, including, you know, the interplay and the choices of notes, that very minor harmonised thing that they do. And I guess that kind of drives home the fact that for fans of Alice in Chains, this is what you were going to be getting for the foreseeable future until hopefully Lane sorted himself out, which, you know, they did do a couple of bits and bobs, but that never really happened.
Yeah, it's just a fairly bog standard grunge song to me.
Boggy standard,
yeah. The horns are an interesting touch. I can't imagine that as something that Alison Chains would have really entertained as an act. And as a guy from Fishbone, so like on this record, he's got Rex Brown from Pantera playing bass in one song and Les Poole in another. So Les Claypool in another. Mm-hmm. Les Poole, it's like Deadpool's brother.
Sounds like a fun place to go swimming.
Yeah. So there's a bit of like, I'm releasing my solo record and you get some names on it as well to try and interest people in it a little bit, which I think is quite common in solo albums. So he was probably looking to let people know that I'm still around, like you said.
Any thoughts?
I also thought the intro, like the start of it, is really weird for where the song goes. Mm-hmm. But then the more I've listened to it, the more it makes sense. But I also didn't know this was the guy from Alice in Chains, and I also have never listened to Alice in Chains.
Mm-hmm. That's odd.
That is odd, isn't it?
That's definitely a generation.
Which is one of those bands that like never really got into it.
I'm the same. I've never
really tried.
They're an odd band in terms of the people that you find out really, really like them, because they've got like a weird cross appeal. I don't want to go and turn this into an Alice in Chains podcast, but they've got like a strange cross appeal. Like they appeal to a lot of like legit metal fans. There's a lot of like Pantera fans really love Alice in Chains.
They're heavy and groovy. Some of the stuff I've heard can be quite heavy and groovy.
Yeah, I mean, I know that like Ben Power, Blank Mass, Namecheck, Clank, he's... He's a big Alice in Chains
fan. He's a good personal friend, though.
And so they had like a kind of... It wasn't like Alice in Chains was a grunge band in the same way as Mudhoney or even like Pearl Jam or something like that. They, mm-hmm. they had a metal legitimacy.
It's like alt-metal in places.
Aye. Anyway, yeah, talking about legitimacy, track 3 on this... Mm-hmm. Grant, you don't have to stifle your laugh. It's okay, you can let it out. Amphetamine by Everclear. Yeah.
So these guys were huge at this point.
They were pretty huge. I mean, this record was pretty easy to come by. Yeah.
probably still is.
Sparkle and Fade, the one before it, was the one that sort of broke them. That was the one where they were sort of getting, you know, touted as the new Nirvana, albeit it was always a lot glossier and happier and a bit more southerny and... Yeah, it was never quite Nirvana. It was just, you know, they were a power trio, bleach blonde hair, heroin problem, that kind of thing.
So this is from So Much for the Afterglow, right? Which was their major label debut.
Yeah, yeah. We've spoken about this album before, and, you know...
You're dying to do it.
I'm dying to do it, because it is honestly one of the albums from my youth that I'm so fucking embarrassed at how much I actually like it. I just really fucking like it. It's got something like, I said this before, it's got something like 40 plus layers of guitar in that album. They went for this wall of sound thing. They wanted to try it as an experiment, and they just layered and layered and layered the guitar and the vocals as well. The album has got like Beach Boys sections. I mean, we had that whole thing with Ucopsy last week where they did a cover of it, and instead of like trying to attempt the harmony part of it, they just copied it off the Everclear album. So they just used the chunk of Everclear and then came in with the rest of the song themselves, which is what you do when you're playing squats in Germany, I guess. But
I mean, 40 and 40 layers, like, after like 5 you can't hear it anymore.
Well, the thing is, man, this is it's a huge sound in this album.
It is, but if you
hear this album
40 guitars
on a good system, it is pretty spectacular how big the sound of the guitars and stuff is, and there's so much going on in terms of like the way they're EQ'd, and it's a big, big sounding record. I mean, I think it's a cheesy as fuck record. They're kind of ridiculous, but God, it's so enjoyable. It's just so like melodic, and you know, and it rocks. It's got stuff in it. It rocks, you know.
Okay, Dad.
would you, if you had never listened to it when you were younger and only listened to it like today?
No, yeah, no, it'd be dreadful.
Like, yeah, because I feel like you've got like some sort of like nostalgia
I have, but the thing is, right, there's going to be bands in this later on that I've got the same thing with, and I am absolutely affronted that I was into them, right? Whereas Everclear with this one, I'm like, you know, no, it's still good. Like, I mean, it's kind of the Weezer thing, and I mean,
it's a total power. That's the thing, that it's like sugary sweet power pop, and it just hits the for that particular kind of music,
yeah,
which is quite hard to get right. I mean, you think about bands like maybe Cheap Trick and Squeeze is other ones from the 70s who did the similar thing. The modern version of this. This is very much the modern version of that. Sorry.
I mean, I think it's a totally it's fair game. You know, it is cheesy, it is corny, but like it's interesting. It's melodic. It's kind of fun.
You totally know that. Like,
it's brutally uncool, though.
Yeah, Cheap Trick were also cheesy, and I think they knew that.
And as a result, a lot of people feel very, you know, fondly about Cheap Trick. This is actually when Everclear were touring with Feeder.
That totally makes sense.
And
did you go to that, sir?
And the opening band in Edinburgh was Muse.
Aye.
Oh, fuck.
And I had a ticket for it. And I got a girlfriend, so I didn't go. Uh-huh. And Colin in my band, Colin didn't speak to me for months because that's
stupid. Is it his girlfriend?
Is it his mum? Colin, you might actually be listening to this, so I'm probably going to pay a price for that gag. But no, we didn't go to the show. And, you know, in hindsight, that was really fucking stupid. But yeah, I passed up a chance to see Fear and Everclear.
I think it's a fun song.
It's a fun song. It's like the Beach Boys, if they took, like, you know, have you seen the show The Boys? You know, the serum take for superpowers.
Yeah.
It's like if the Beach Boys took that. It's just, it's to say it's on steroids doesn't even do it justice because it's got 40 layers of guitar in it. She wakes me up in the middle of the night just to tell me everything will be alright. Yeah, I want to give special props to the outro harmonies as well. I think they do a lot of that kind of stuff, and it's just really indulgent and nice.
It's something you totally hear in a 90s high school film, you know.
It should have been in more of those.
That's what I've got written down as well.
The thing is, it wasn't synced as much as I really feel it should have been. It seems like it would be an obvious choice, but it never really did get that.
What is the bigger song from this record? There's a big, big single, right?
I'll Buy You a New Life, I think, was the big one in this. Yeah, I mean, the bigger stuff by Everclear came before, like Santa Monica and Heart Spark Dollar Sign and stuff like that. Swim out past the breaker, watch the world die. We can live beside the ocean, leave the fire behind. Swim out past the breaker, watch the world die. So, no apologies, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah,
you know what? I think actually the guys in the other podcast said it as well. This would probably been a better starting track just because of the way it bursts in.
It's got more energy, man, for sure.
On this CD, sorry. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think it's a fun song, and I can appreciate it for what it is because I like Weezer.
Yeah, well, that's it.
I had notes that if a new band put this song out and run for cover records this year, I think that would actually make sense.
Yeah. I don't know who that is, but
Run for Cover Records, they put out, like, it's kind of American label. They do like Self Defense, they do like a bunch of different stuff, but like they're doing, a lot of the new bands they're doing are like One Step Closer.
Oh yeah,
I know that shit. Like it's not a million miles away from this.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I thought the vocals were, like, if there was a more interesting vocal, this could have held up quite well.
I actually thought Art Alexakis had a pretty decent vocal. He's got a distinctive voice.
He does, but I think it's my least favourite bit of this track, apart from the extremely long orchestral string section at the end.
Oh yeah, I quite like that.
But like the guitar tones and stuff, I think they've aged quite well.
All 40 of them, yeah. Able to pick them in.
it sounds a bit like Phantom Planet. California.
California, here we come. California, California.
Well, that would make sense because they're kind of a power poppy band as well. Aye. So,
and they've got that one really, really good song.
Yeah,
is that
the OC?
California.
Yeah. California, yeah.
I DJ that every night at Chef's Man.
I think that song might have actually come out soon after this, or at the same time, roughly. I don't think it came out when the OC came out.
2001, I think, because when Phantom Planet were about, because Jason Schwartzman was the drummer for them at that point.
Yeah,
that's mad.
Yep,
was it?
Big fan of that song. Can't say enough. I could do a full episode on that song.
Fourth track, Mark, you might have heard this band, Bad Religion.
Yeah, we've done a whole couple episodes on this.
We
spoke about this era as well, in particular.
We did.
One of the records you picked was from this era.
Yeah, so this is the biggest killer in American history.
It's the best song in a shite record.
Yeah, so it's taken from No Substance, which is their 10th album overall. It was their third on Atlantic, and or fourth if you count the reissue of, what do you call it? And
second without Gerwitz.
Yeah, the second without Brett Gerwitz. It's follow-up to The Grey Race, which we mentioned at length, which I think is a fucking great record. This isn't brilliant. I actually don't think the band liked it very much because it rarely appeared in their live sets.
Yeah, a lot of this era doesn't. But I think a couple of years ago, kind of just after the pandemic, they did a couple of live shows, like recorded and did eras of songs. I don't know if they played any. They probably would have played some of these songs.
It's not terrible. I mean, I think actually the verse is considerably better than the chorus in this tune. The verse sounds like a Bad Religion song.
See, I like it because I like the chorus because it has a starter thing, which I think is a cool effect, uh-huh. But also it comes into a halftime. Which don't do a lot of, and it actually fucks with the formula a little bit, which I quite appreciate in a Bad Religion
song.
Yeah,
I suppose. I mean, when you're Bad Religion and so many of your songs are so similar,
yeah,
you do have to kind of start getting into the details to try and find a bit of variety. It was re-released by Epitaph, the album,
was it?
A decade later, yeah, so like 2008 it came out again.
Who let that happen?
Fucking Brett must have got over it, man. So there was a rumour, actually, that the model on the cover was Kristen Johnson, you know, the woman from Third Rock from the Sun.
Really?
Tall blonde woman, but she's denied it. And there was also a phone number on the front on the TV, and you could call that, and I believe it went through to some sort of like agrochemical switchboard or something like that. You know, Bad Religion, obviously very political. Apparently the Japanese version of that album had a track on it called Dream of Unity, which I can tell you is a fucking great track by Bad Religion. And is better than every single track on the actual album. So the Japanese were probably like, this is a great album. You thought I was going to do a Japanese accent?
No.
I saw the look of dread, like, I'm going to have to opt out. No, the Japanese said it in a Scottish accent.
This was a single from this record as well. So the band obviously knew this was the best song on it.
Yeah. This is the only song.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I like it. It's probably, you know what's going to be my highlights. So.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting that the guys in the other podcast really didn't rate Bad Religion.
Yeah, I think it's easy to do. Like, Jason and my band doesn't really rate them either because he thinks all the songs sound the same. And to be fair, they do.
You kind of do, yeah.
They have one trick, you know?
It's a weird thing, though, because it makes me feel a bit more compassionately or a bit more empathetic to people that inexplicably like other bands that I just don't get. Because Bad Religion, hearing somebody talk about them like that and being like, how can you not see how fucking great their vocals and their melodies and their harmonies are? Like, they are amazing at writing melodies and harmonies. Nobody's even close to them. Yeah. You know, bands have tried to copy them, but nobody does it as consistently. So when I think about how much I'm into the band overall, I'm like, all right, maybe I should take it a bit easier on like Guns N' Roses fans or, you know, whatever.
Oh, no. Anyone else, that's fine.
I do wonder if part of it is just this idea that it's like, there's no sacred cows, right? Because these guys are legendary, you know, and they are one of the pantheon, they all live in the pantheon of one of the greatest American punk bands that's ever been, and they are royalty, you know.
Maybe that works against them. Maybe
I think that's what I was saying. I think there's no sacred cows. I think like people like just bounce off it really quickly. It's like, well, I've heard all of this, but done better, and then interim period, which, you know.
I'd beg to differ. No, I mean, I agree with you, but I actually don't think many people have done this better, even in bursts, but there you go.
I've never listened to Bad Religion until this song.
No, well, this is not a good way to make a decision on them. I'm not sure you would like them, but they have some.
Well, it's interesting. Maybe a couple of weeks ago, I just finished the NoFX audiobook.
Bathtub.
Yes.
Is it good?
Fascinating, by the way.
Yeah, I've heard this fucking.
Some of the stories in it are like. I had to pause it, but some of the stories are fucking hilarious as well.
There's a song, and it's weird that you mentioned that because I spent a lot of last week listening to NoFX. I don't really like NoFX. I just kind of fell down a bit of a rabbit hole because they're breaking up after 40 years. They're done, like they're pure kaput.
About time.
Yeah. And there's a song on their new record called Linoleum, which is like a re-recording of Linoleum, which they put on a recent-ish album recorded by Avenged Sevenfold with new vocals by Fat Mike. Right. And the vocals are basically him telling and basically talking about how he's basically putting this cow out to this horse out to pasture. He's like, he's done with that. He's like, he's over it. He's like, I don't even understand why people like this song. It doesn't even got a chorus. What the fuck's going on? And it's really funny. There's a bit in it towards the end where the lyric is about like my daughter read my book and she now knows that I like that I'm kinky and I like to drink pee.
there's a lot of pee drinking in the audiobook, man.
And there's a clip of her voice which is like a voice note and she just goes dad, and it's just so fucking funny, man.
See, yeah, we've managed to get a number of farmyard animals into this conversation already. I think we should.
That was my intent coming in here today.
We should keep going.
But anyway.
But no, because I listened to the audiobook, there's a bit when they're talking about when the band were trying to like get better instead of being losers, and it was a Bad Religion album. And I appreciate the legacy they have, but I just hadn't really listened to them. And to be honest, once I got to the end of the NoFX audiobook, I didn't want to listen to any of the bands that were involved in the story because it was 117 chapters, 20-hour audiobook or something, and I listened to all of it at work. And it's like part of it broke my brain. The first story he tells is about how he like spoilers, he met a fan who had recently gave birth and she'd always wanted to be milked, so he milked her in the green room and made a white Russian wear breast milk.
It's just so fucking, like, it's so Fat Mike.
It's literally, that's the first chapter. And then there's a whole chapter about how he makes people drink his piss.
Uh-huh.
Like, how he's done it over the years. So when it came up, Bad Religion, I'm like, this is a good time to rip the band-aid off and just try and listen to them. And I found this song is far too many tempo changes in it. I just
see, that's
what he likes about it.
That's what I like about it, because they don't do that.
Yeah, they don't usually do that.
It's not a feature.
I'm not a huge fan of that.
Right,
part.
Well, I'll need to tell me an album to listen to after this and I can...
I'll sort you.
He fucking won't sort you.
The way you're putting your finger, that means very threatening.
I've got you covered.
Don't
here,
ever
man.
Mention we've NoFX got, on my podcast.
Let's plug our own podcast. We've got a playlist which you can send to you, which has got all the best Bad Religion songs in it, between both of us.
It's called Good Religion.
Very good.
Thank you. Wait a minute. So one thing I will say is, see the sequencing of having Everclear and Bad Religion, they're not similar bands really, but that wall of sound and loads of vocal harmonies approach, the two of them do kind of work together. I mean, there are definitely crossover points where you could put Everclear and a Bad Religion song, especially maybe one of the slower ones of Grey Race, together on a compilation and have them feel quite comfortable. So yeah, the big melodic wall of sound thing is a feature for both bands.
Yeah.
Not so for the next band, Psycore, and the track Chocolate Milkshake.
Do you remember?
I want to make clear. So Psycore cropped up on the Metal Hammer one that we did.
No, they were on Volume 5.
Volume 5.
They were on the fucking the same compilation series before this.
So yeah, so I remember going down a bit of a Psycore hole and being strangely seduced. I singled them out on that episode. They're a Swedish four-piece from Gothenburg. They only did two albums.
And broke up.
This tune is stupid as fuck, but I think it's a wee bit of a ripper.
Really?
Ridiculously simplistic and kind of effective as a result. I mean, apparently the song's about a hangover and the guy wants a chocolate milkshake to cure his hangover.
Fucking amazing chat.
I mean, it's, you're like, oh, chocolate milkshake, there's some sort of innuendo in there, you know, that's starfish, chocolate.
That's what I was thinking.
No, nothing. That's just, well, I wants a chocolate milkshake over his hangover.
That's actually quite wholesome.
Whole milk.
I think the intro of this song milk, is
milking,
great.
More farmyard.
We've just done NoFX.
We also did Bad Religion, and everyone knows they're the goat.
Hi. Get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, there's something weirdly compelling about Psycho to me, right? I mean, they're oddballs even in the context of the new metal scene. I kind of feel like they have more of a kinship with some of the Japanese stuff, sort of like Mad Capsule Markets and
really?
That side of like new metal. That not so much the American stuff like Mudvayne. I don't really see that in them. I think like tracks like I Go Solo and Circus that are really like largely spoken. 'Cause I care for you, but you have no reason to take it out on me. Not worth it, I resign, set myself free. The fact they use the piccolo snare a lot, which is pretty idiosyncratic, I can't tell if I'm being objective in that assessment, but they just don't really, I mean, they're Swedish, right? So they don't fit in that pantheon of American new metal. But at the same time, I would acknowledge, I mean, what was it Weaver called them? Is Sweden of a Down or something like that, you know?
That's great, kid. But I actually hadn't thought of the System of a Down.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but yeah, that's the thing, that System of a Down had that eccentricity, that sort of like playfulness and kind of, they fuck about with the vocals and do, and then like, low spoken word stuff, and I mean, yeah, they do have loads of like stump dumb hooky moments that are probably like closer to Coal Chamber. I mean, I think there's a bit in this that's
I've
like
written Coal Chamber, yeah.
Yeah, it's slam, goddamn, get off your ass and jam, but reminds me a bit like the roof is on fire sort of stuff. That's in that song Full Blood Freak, which by the way is the track that got the Full Blood Freak is it sequel or something like that? It's like a reprise, which is like a sort of half-timed version of it. Anyway, I don't know. It's the one that sounds like Lowrider by the band War.
Okay.
Do you know the one I mean?
No.
I'll cut it in. And sorry, I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I mean, I still kind of feel that this is good as an inclusion in this comp because it's memorable. I mean, it's kind of like rapid, it's stupid, it's sort of like, I mean, that band Snot, they had tracks like this as well where they would just throw in a ridiculously fast, simple idea and it would just kind of get stuck in your head. Loads of people knew this track, like Chocolate really? Milkshake. It was like, it was just like, Chocolate Milkshake! Just like stupid thing that people knew, it caught on almost like a new metal meme for a little bit. I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on them? I'm curious.
I really like the intro. I was like, it sounds like 3-1-G or like Milk Banana. And when it kicked in, I was like,
so that's what I'm talking about. That kind of like Japanese sort of like mad.
And it was so chaotic. And I was like, oh, that's actually, it was the first thing when I was listening to this in order. I was like, oh, this is actually interesting. And then the vocals come in and it just fucked it. From the first verse to the end, it sucks, but the intro is like legit pretty cool. And they just sound like they're doing a really bad version of like Unsane for the verses and stuff. Just like that kind of like riffy thing, and the vocals, but like not nearly as good as Unsane. And the snare drum sounds a bit like Saint Anger.
It's
the Saint Anger.
Distinctive. It's distinctive. They really fucking went for that. Like, they sure super did. Tight. Fucking super tight. Get my skin tighter.
But yeah, if it's a piccolo snare, that makes sense. It will I think be it like was, super. Yeah.
I can't believe these guys released two records on a major label. That's fucking mind blown.
But you think they're that bad?
They're on V2 Records.
Yeah, but you think they're that bad?
Yeah. I didn't like them before. I said the last track was an aberration, and I think this song is also an aberration.
They are not the worst band on this compilation.
They're not the worst band on this compilation.
I can totally believe they'd like be on a major, but like they're not the worst band coming up.
They sound like Sepultura, like new metal Sepultura meets the heavier bits of Stabbing Westwood meets Cold Chamber. I don't like any of those bands.
But they're funner than all of those. Like, they've got a whole thing of like quite lightheartedness, I think.
I guess, which is a stark contrast to the next song, which is no humour at all.
You want to introduce this one?
It's Brain Spiller by 1 Minute Silence. Channel thinking trick to the happy killer, not just another story, not just another filler for all the little boys and girls. Brain Spiller, not just another story, not just another filler, not just another channel thinking trick to the happy killer, not just another story, not just another filler for all the little boys and girls. Brain Spiller.
Channel X is crap.
Right, so this band, I saw them supporting Slipknot in 2001 in SECC.
Oh shit!
And they were fucking brilliant live. They were so good.
Really? Okay.
Their music is dreadful, but they were really good. They were really, especially on a stage that big, I was really surprised at how good they were. But by that point, they just released their major label record, and they were actually being a good band. This is just...
Was that By Now, Saved Later?
Yeah, the one with Ross Robinson produced it. It was released on Universal. But this song is just some, like, pseudo-political, not even pseudo-political, it is actually political, quote-unquote political, like fucking yappy new metal nonsense.
But the guy's name is Brian Yap Barry.
Yeah, I know.
The singer. Mm-hmm.
He did time for, he lived above a pub, and the pub went on fire because he was growing his own weed, and he went to jail for it.
Wow.
He was supposed to get 14 years, only served, the judge only gave him 3 months, which is 3 months and £500 fine.
Wow.
Because he was a big 1 Minute Silence fan.
Probably, aye.
Totally. Yeah. Well, there's actually a lot of really interesting trivia about this. But Grant, what's your gut reaction to this one?
I fucking hated this. My first note is Jesus Christ.
I don't find it particularly egregious. Like, there's definitely worse new metal that I've heard on this show. But, you know, it's fine.
I feel like 1 Minute Silence are actually closer to rap metal. And I know that's 100%. Sort of splitting hairs, yeah, but they're very much... So they're like the British Rage Against the Machine, at least that's what I think they thought. Albeit, you know, the members are just from like all across Europe. There's like two folk from Gibraltar, Brian was from Republic of Ireland, somebody's from Greece. But I think they were based in Britain.
No, based in Ireland, because I remember at the time they were called an Irish band. Uh-huh.
They got labelled all over the places like British rock. I was like, where's that coming from? But anyway, yeah, I actually saw them play live as well, and I can't remember who it was for. And I do agree, they were like a very tight and sort of stripped back live band. They didn't have like loads of bells and whistles around them. They had the track called 1845. Which I remember being quite into, because I think a bit like, you know, Chocolate Milkshake. It was just really fast and direct and didn't fuck around. It was just like like straight in, and I quite enjoyed that. Brian Yap Barry, though, let's talk about Brian a wee bit. I mean, you take a listen to the lyrics and have a guess where this guy's politics has ended up.
Well, I mean, they profess themselves to be anti-capitalist, so...
Yeah, anarchist, anti-capitalist. Yeah. I mean, it's telling, I think, that a couple of the tracks on By Now, Saved Later are based on material by Bill Hicks. So there's a track called It's Just a Ride, which is obviously a lift to Bill Hicks, and there's another one called If I Can Change, which is inspired in some way. And we've actually discussed before where a lot of, like, Bill Hicks's material might land these days in the political spectrum, you know? And I say that as somebody that was a fucking massive Bill Hicks fan, but... A lot of it didn't age very well, or a lot of it's kind of like grown arms and legs and dragged itself off into some pretty fucking dark corners. And this appears to be kind of a prime case. So Brian Barry, an Irish man with a lot of sympathy for Palestine, rightly so, but maybe some problematic ways of expressing it. Mm. He likes the phrase, the chosen ones, as in like the chosen ones are at it again. The chosen ones are doing this and that.
Big dog whistle right there.
As you said, the official line is that the band itself is non-political, although the members are, which I'm not really sure that distinction makes sense. But as you said, the flavour, anarchist, anti-capitalist. But he likes to repost a fair bit of Jordan Peterson and Candace.
Is he actually at it online?
On his Facebook, okay. It's like a lot of Candace Owens, a lot of Jordan Peterson, fair bit of anti-trans stuff, bit of men's rights stuff. I mean, it's pretty much the kind of perfect post-truth political shit show, you know, where liberal politics and right-wing garbage are thrown into a sort of internet blender, that kind of thing.
Well, as you know yourself, man, like, I think for a lot of people who are quite distrustful of government and quote-unquote anti-capitalist...
And smoke too much weed.
There's definitely like a pipeline, you know, from moving from this
absolutely.
To that, you know,
and well documented.
I think it is pretty clear, yeah. You know. So it's sad to hear that, but also completely unsurprising in a lot of ways.
Here's something even more interesting, though. On the Wikipedia, it now says that Brian Barry works for MI6.
Which, no, he fucking doesn't.
Right, so there's no...
no, he fucking doesn't.
There's no thing after it that says citation needed. So on one hand, you're like, oh, that's interesting. But it's either a self-troll.
Absolutely has to be.
Or... I would suggest it could be an edit by some wacko that he's met on one of his fucking online forums that's like, you're here to penetrate our ranks.
Also, is MI6 not the international one? Is MI5 not the one at home? Or
yeah.
It, yeah, so that wouldn't even make any sense.
Well, he's Irish, I don't know. Maybe he's...
there's no fucking...
It's on Wikipedia, man. It must be true.
Wikipedia's generally quite reliable these days, but sometimes
I mean, as Brian will tell you, if it's on the internet, man...
It must be real, man.
I mean, the song is fucking garbage. Absolute garbage. And I'm really sorry, because the Free With This Month guys really like this. I think for the cringeworthy and kind of confusing newscast intro about somebody called the Brain Spiller, like a serial killer or a mass murderer or something.
The notorious Brain Spiller was today captured after a 4-hour showdown with police, leaving 27 police officers and all 19 hostages dead.
Not just another story, not just another filler, not just another channel taking trick to the happy killer.
Not really sure what the point of that is, to that off-the-shelf 90s rap metal riff, to obviously, like, blatantly aping Rage Against the Machine. And then I think the worst of the worst is that towards the end there's a line where he says, "Nobody home again," and that sort of whimpered Jonathan Davis, "Nobody home again." At feigning that fucking oh my god, it's a fucking horrendous bit of music. It really is.
There's a threat of a kind of beat there in the middle, which is kind of funk metally, but that's like the only interesting thing about it. It's not aged well, it's far too long, it's almost 5 minutes long,
way too long.
Like, what the fuck is that all about?
Like, even if I was enjoying this, it's still too long.
The intro's really long as well, though. Aye. I mean, even just the intro labours,
it's still too long. If you take it out, it's still too long.
There's a bit around the 4 minute mark that it sounds a lot.
Are you addressing this to Mark?
Just to the room.
All right, okay. There's a bit around the 4 minute room.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Get him out of here. Get him out of here.
You're a week. Literally. It's my house.
Around the 4 minute mark, it sounds a bit like Turnstile.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah,
I hadn't noticed that.
I hope you'll send me what.
Just
bit.
Like, it's that kind of like, it's this similar kind of tempo, and it's like the big delayed reverb vocal. I think
maybe that's the threatened to be a beatdown bit that I was thinking.
It could
of,
be. It was about 4 minute mark. That was like the only bit I noticed.
So I need to cut these samples in, but I have no idea about Turnstile. So you'll need to tell me what to look for there.
I'll do that.
Are you thinking?
Separately.
Are you thinking from Holiday, like the main riff?
But I just, the vocal, which is like Turnstile, just copied 90s bands that were doing that. I was really struggling with this one, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, what was before? I just enjoyed Psycho so much. It was a real peak and trough going into 1 minute silence.
Right, well, that kind of, I mean, we're almost at the halfway mark, right? But I think we're almost at the halfway room.
I knew you were going to do that.
we'll maybe break there. We'll come back for side B. Grant, you surviving? How's this new format?
What, this is good, yeah. I just need to know what the running joke is between the two of you.
There is none.
I just said Mark, it's just my name. That's the joke. It's a terrible joke. That's why I don't get it.
Cool. Cut this bit out.
Do you think Brian and his internet forums talk a lot about sheeple?
I think he's going to listen to this.
Because I just want to like put that into our farmyard pile there of yet another. Cool. Right, let's break for side A. See you shortly.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.